Welcome to Movie Banter.
I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sands.
I'm Jennifer Masters.
Kills the breeze. Exactly, as ever. When weren't you?
This week, the part of Jennifer Masters will be played by someone else.
Exactly.
We've recast you.
With the daughter of Phil Collins.
Yes. Yeah, well, this may need to be remixed because this is podcast 62, but it's kind of 61.
For you, it's been a week. For us, just a few minutes.
Exactly.
It's like Back to the Future.
It's like time travel. We're moving at the speed of light.
Indeed.
Well, yes, because we only record them once every 2 weeks, but there was such a heavy one this week. Or this 2 weeks,
yeah.
That we thought we'd split it into two. And as it turns out, the last episode was actually like a normal length. We thought it'd be two short ones.
It's
actually going to be two full-length podcasts.
This one might be a little bit shorter.
We'll try. But apologies for using your time. But you can always pause and come back to it.
Exactly.
But what are you here for?
Well, exactly. You want movies? You want banter? Exactly. This is the place to be.
It's where it's at, baby.
We're serving it up.
So yeah, last week we mentioned about Lily Collins, who is Phil Collins' daughter and plays Collins.
In the film Michael Collins.
In The Blind Side,
yeah. So there may be the occasional reference to something which is really current for us, but it's a week old for you.
Well, we'll try and...
You should really be listening to the podcast in order anyway.
Exactly. We'll try and refrain from being too in-joking, but when do we ever do that? So this week, in this half of the Uber episode, we have Green Zone.
Mm.
And Shutter Island, and the girl with the dragon tattoo, and the dragon with the girl tattoo, and Chloe. Plus your emails and tweets, and Desert Island Flicks, which this week will be best Martin Scorsese film.
Oh, yes. Because of Shutter Island, just in case you're wondering why.
Now, last week, last episode, last minute for us.
Last minute. a mere seconds ago.
We talked about the Oscars.
Yes.
And I meant to do my big Oscar quiz.
Hey!
And I forgot to do my big Oscar quiz.
Boom.
So I'm going to do my big Oscar quiz now. There we go. It's a roller coaster of emotions.
It really is. I'm all over the place. Don't know if I'm coming or going.
Now this is more, it's not so much a trip. Don't look at the screen. I saw the looks at the screen.
Can't trust her.
This isn't really, I know I'm a quiz fan, as we're well aware on this podcast. This isn't really like a general knowledgey thing, or it's not for points or anything.
So it's not general ones, it's very, very specific.
Exactly. No, I only put it together because I saw this listed in the trivia thing of the Oscar thing. You know, when the Oscars come out, all the news articles are about his Oscar trivia. And I thought it was quite interesting, and I thought it's quite telling as well about, which sort of makes sense as to what films win when.
Right.
And it shows the prejudices of the Oscar pickers.
Okay.
Not as in racial prejudice necessarily, although that is in there a little bit, but more about the genres of films that do and don't win, and therefore what you can tell will win in the future. I think quite telling.
Okay.
So
the fashion, basically.
Exactly, the fashion. Mm-hmm. So for example, question one, the last X-rated film to be nominated for Best Picture.
Because X, you think porn, but X for a while was kind of like
just
the 18
anyway.
R-rated.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a while.
I can't think of that many X-rated films. I'm fairly sure Caligula was, but I doubt it was Best Picture because it was rubbish.
Shall I just tell you?
Yeah.
Clockwork Orange.
That makes sense.
There you go. Back in the 70s.
Mm.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Two families have spawned three generations of Oscar winners.
Ooh.
Any guesses as to one of them?
Hang on, say that again. Can you
two different families have spawned three generations of Oscar winners. So, granddad, dad and son, or grandma.
The Douglases. Actually, they're only there in two generations.
In fact, I've just realised I've only got one of the families as the answer. I don't know who the other one is. So we'll set the other one as a challenge for the listeners to email in with the other lot. I can tell you it's the Houstons. Walter Houston, John Houston and Angelica Houston and Whitney. He's done nothing.
And then there was that other one who had a problem in Apollo 13.
He did, didn't he?
That was terrible.
Awful. Really bad.
Poor guy.
First sequel.
Sorry, he did all right of it. So.
Yeah.
First sequel to win Best Picture.
Godfather 2.
Absolutely.
Why am I here?
You'll get this one.
Jen, you do know that we can hear you.
Yeah.
Is this just
don't even like films.
Barely likes us.
First sci-fi film to be nominated for Best Picture.
2001?
No, later than that.
Moonraker, no.
It's not Star Wars, is it?
It was Star Wars.
Yeah!
I didn't know that was nominated for Best Picture.
Lost out to Annie Hall.
What, in the sci-fi category?
Sorry. Didn't have best sci-fi, you know. So, speaking of Annie Hall, they do say Annie Hall is basically the last comedy to have won Best Picture.
Makes sense.
I don't think I know it.
Although, but Shakespeare in Love did win Best Picture.
That's a comedy.
No one ever seems to ignore that.
Well, yeah. That's always, there's always, someone pointed out recently in terms of kind of demonstrating that the best picture doesn't necessarily mean anything down the line. And just viewing what films won over other films. And it's always quite surprising. And I think Citizen Kane lost out to something I've barely heard of. And yet now no one knows the other film.
Maybe it's kind of like the good kid in the class, you know, the good all-rounder, the good egg. We're going to give it
to
you.
Who then goes on to become nothing. It's like, I mean, I like Shakespeare, and I'm a perfectly decent film, but I'd never think, oh, what's good? Whereas
you compare to other
it lost out to Saving Private Ryan, which is arguably far more impactful film. So it's just a weird...
It's rather odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
So goes to Joe, it's all rubbish.
It's all political.
The first courtesy award.
First horror film to win Best Picture.
Ooh. Horror. I doubt the Exorcist one.
Oh, I don't know.
Exorcist, I think, was the first one to be nominated for Best Picture, I believe. Okay. But the first one to win.
Omen?
A bit after that. Because it took a while, because the Oscars have been going for since the 20s, 30s, and took till 19, I think it's 1990 or 1991, it might be. Silence of the Lambs.
That makes sense.
Does that count as horror? I suppose it is.
Yeah, I think so.
It's a horror thriller, isn't it?
Yeah. Sort of intense thriller. Yeah.
The only film based on a TV series to ever be nominated for Best Picture.
Monty Python?
No, I don't think they've never been Oscar nominated for anything, I don't think, unfortunately. The Fugitive. That's the only. So TV spin-offs as films, forget it.
Of course, they wouldn't get an Oscar.
In fact, I'm even surprised The Fugitive was Best Picture nominee.
I think I was just distracted by your CD collection.
Oh, well, why wouldn't you be?
On the Monty Python going.
Oh, I see, you're looking along going.
They made
life.
Films out of series.
Yeah.
Yes. Actually, remind me about the Monty Python reference for a film we're going to review later on.
Curious.
I know a couple more here. Only fantasy film to win Best Picture.
Oh. I'm also thinking Fantasia, but I doubt it.
No, more recent, much more recent. Ask a few
Big
years.
Fish?
No,
it wasn't even nominated, I don't think.
No.
Oh.
Much to everyone's chagrin. Ah, of course.
Oh. Yeah, Return of the King.
I suppose Big Fish is actually slightly set in real life, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it wouldn't count as fantasy necessarily. No. But it goes to show, again, fantasy is ignored by the Oscars generally.
You need real.
Exactly. What else have we got?
Avatar. Actually, no, Avatar isn't fantasy, though, is it? It's kind of
sci-fi. Yeah. It's going to be sci-fi, really, yeah. First film festival acquisition to win Best Picture. Now, this is interesting, because The Hurt Locker was a film festival acquisition. Mm-hmm. And they were saying with the Oscars this year that, of course, if Avatar won, it'd be the most expensive film to win Best Picture.
Yes, highest grossing.
And Hurt Locker would be the lowest.
Yes.
Given
that it made about £2.50.
Exactly, something like that. But yeah, the first one was actually quite recently. It was Crash. Not too long ago.
That was a film festival.
It was, yeah. Before that, no other film festival acquisitions ever won. So it's normally just the tide produced. Is turning from the studio system.
Very slightly. Well, imagine it's cost spiral and spiral and spiral. You're going to get slightly more creepy in at the bottom.
And
like you were saying the other day, that sometimes it's more imaginative and individual ideas that come out through the festivals, which usually get the attention of people as well.
So I think that, it's turning in their favour, which is
hopefully so.
No bad thing. Last two questions. First film directed by an African American to be nominated for Best Picture.
Ooh, almost certainly something by Spike Lee.
No.
Ooh.
It was this year. Precious, that would be.
Oh, really?
Before that, no African American director has ever had his film to be nominated for Best Picture. Which is, again, worrying almost in a way.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that's appalling, except I really doubt it's a racial decision.
I think it's because there's not that many, actually. Which is another question, is why aren't there?
Well, yes, very similar to not many female directors.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How bizarre.
Unnerving. And final question. In the film Gone with the Wind, did Clark Gable play a psychic? Sorry, that's a rhetorical question.
I could see that coming because you put that on Twitter the other day.
Oracle. I'm just ashamed of myself going along with it, going, what?
Oh, no, I would have done if I hadn't read his Twitter feed.
Rhett.
I remember Oracle. Reading it and thinking, I must punch you in the face when I next see you.
Clark Gable played a...
Yeah.
Rhett Butler and he's... Doesn't matter.
I apologise, listeners.
We're crashing on at great speed. Should we do Green Zone?
Let's do Green Zone.
Hey!
Which I think we've all seen.
I've seen the first hour.
Ah. Are you doing your belated sandwich?
Well, yeah, because I couldn't fit in the second hour, so I thought I'd see it in two chunks. So I'm treating it like a mini-series.
Well, fair enough.
I've seen part one. To be fair, I really enjoyed part one.
I think the second half is much like the first
one. So don't give away the second hour, but I'd imagine you would anyway. It's more running around with Matt Damon in Iraq, really.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, this is the Iraq thriller set in, I think it's 2003, just at the time of the invasion. With then plans afoot as to how the Americans are trying to rebuild Iraq and what's going to go on. while at the same time searching for weapons of mass destruction without much success, as we all
found out. So it's set quite a few years ago, really.
Yeah, well, it's 2003, so it's when the invasion was all kicking off, and everyone was still very much of a mindset of, we've been told there are weapons of mass destruction, let's go in and find them. And then, hang on, we can't find any, why is that?
Oh, and no one's been here for 10 years.
Ten years. But it's directed by Paul Greengrass and starring Matt Damon, so it feels kind of like a Bourne film, but not very. I think it does a good job of being different, because it's
different enough.
Yes, and because he's not... I mean, he ends up sort of solo, but it's not him being a one-man killing machine fighting against the system.
Yeah, you say that.
I don't think it is. I mean, he starts off part of a group, and then he's still working with the CIA trying to get the truth. And
it's slightly more personal than humanistic, but the problem I had was that it was literally one man brings down... I don't know.
I didn't think it was. Well, the trouble is now we're moving to the second half, Paul, which you haven't seen. But it's not... While it is him, but he's with a group, and it's only towards the end he gets separated from that group. Because he's trying to arrange a meeting with someone, and he can get
someone. We always knew that this is the born Iraqi, isn't it, really? And it's going to be him as one man on his own, because that's what film.
But at least with the support of other people. It's still, he's sort of front and centre. But they don't portray it too much as, he's going against everyone. The message of the film is that the Pentagon was getting involved and saying, oh, we want to do things our way. The CIA was being increasingly cut out of the loop, trying to say, with Brendan Gleeson, also Brendan Fraser, saying, no, you need to keep the Iraqi army on board, because without it, the country's going to fall apart. And the Pentagon saying, no, it'll be fine. Oh, look, it's all falling apart. And then different backdoor dealings behind. So there's a degree of political shuffling going on, as well as him on the front lines.
Mm.
And then Brendan Gleeson trying to help him out and stay in the loop. So it's quite convoluted up to a point, but I think it's clear as well.
I think it needs to be a bit convoluted so that it's not... The danger would be that it looks just like, oh, it's the guys who do the Bourne films, but they set it in Iraq.
Yes.
And which it sort of is.
It sort of is, but it's not. It's its own...
cracking story as well.
Yeah.
And I think the strengths of it are that it's got the exciting chase scenes and all that of Bourne, but it's also got a credible story and a credible... and a recent history that we all were part of.
And also, because it's not 100% based on a true story in terms of everyone's individual involvement, but it's more so than I thought it was, in that Matt Damon's character is based on an actual Marine or soldier in a group searching for weapons of mass destruction, who didn't then end up going alone and finding out what was going on, but he was part of that group and started asking questions. And the main... it's got Greg Kinnear as the main Pentagon man, who is a combination of a couple of people, and Brendan Gleeson is the main CIA man, who's a combination of a couple of people. But the broad sweep of it is all pretty much what happened. So it's not taking too many liberties with what actually happened, as far as I know.
I mean, I suppose what's quite interesting, really, is that who really defines what's the right way, what is the right situation, and who to trust and what side you're on. So yeah, it does throw up some questions. It's just the fact that it did suddenly go a bit one man on his own that I sort of went a bit, oh, it's a bit blokey now. Before I was actually I was really enjoying it.
No, fair enough. I mean, it does towards the end, but I'd argue that it's only because in the run up to the end he's trying to meet up with one main Iraqi guy, and it raises interesting questions in terms of who they'd have to deal with, knowing they'd have to deal with people who aren't particularly... You can either try and cut everyone out of the loop completely and go from scratch, which is what they did and why it didn't work, or you can just say, okay, some of these aren't the nicest people in the world, but they're not pure evil either.
Yeah.
We need to work with them, and some people didn't want to work with them. So Matt Damon's trying to arrange a meeting with one of these guys, and he's with a group with other people, and it's only towards the end he splits off. But the very end is a little bit, I'm going to make a decision and do something.
Yeah.
Which I think is where it probably takes the biggest liberty.
Right.
Not that it's the same thing, but you know how you... Remember how you felt about the Da Vinci Code?
Yes.
I had a little bit of that. Just a little bit of that. The kind of like, it's sort of based sort of in reality, but then all these other things that are coming in on it, and you're there going, oh.
I know what you mean.
But they're not... But I genuinely don't think they took too many liberties than making up with the Da Vinci Code. No, you said they made up lots of history.
And more said, so, I think
this is
that.
All real.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying it's the same thing, but you know that feeling.
No, for right. Yeah. No,
they've rewritten history with the Da Vinci Code.
Yes.
Whereas
they've sort of simplified it, I think, but they haven't actually created.
Well,
too much.
Paul Greengrass has. I heard him being interviewed by, and he's had a little bit of flak jacket from some people about the fact that he will people watch it and think, oh, that's exactly what happened? Hmm. And he's defended it by saying, well, you know, we're taking liberties because it's an entertainment. Number one, it's entertainment.
Yeah, yeah. That's what
number
I remind
two,
myself.
It's, you know, a serious point we're trying to get across. But number one is entertainment.
Yeah.
And people go to the, you know, cinema, they know it's a story. But I know what you mean. There's a slight haziness in that it is based on a real person. Mm. And so therefore, if you're going to do that, you expect it to be a real story. But I thought the what I've seen so far, anyway, the green part. I haven't seen the zone yet, but the green part I thought was excellent, really.
And it is. It's very compelling the whole way through, and it's nicely paced.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But it doesn't seem to have done particularly well at the box office. And again, I think it may just be people are still thinking war films are just they're not in the mood to see a war film. It's a little bit too current. It's a little bit too.
I don't know.
Something.
I think it's. Probably, I think it might be one that will do well on DVD because the Bourne fans, you know, will add it to their collection. I think. And it made me want more Bourne films, really, as well.
Yeah. In a way that, I think they said that's not going
to
happen.
They said they're not going to really, yeah. but in a way that you know, I used to long for the next Bond film, but I haven't really lately myself.
Yeah.
But I now have that same feeling about this that I watch them and go, I know it's probably not going to happen. But they, you know, I could quite happily have one every couple of years, and they wouldn't need to do that much of a different sort of story.
Yes,
you know, more of the same's fine. Paul Greengrass is very, very good.
Yeah.
At directing as well. You know, he writes it, and he just puts. You know, he did the United 93 film as well, and just really good at making those current events exciting. And even the Bourne films felt current and felt topical.
No, very true.
Even if they weren't a genuine story. So I heard a thing with Jason Isaacs, who of course is in it as a wonderfully mustachioed.
I know, and I knew
Uber dude
because I remembered from reading up on it that that someone played that guy, the main special forces guy. Yeah, he's sort of the main antagonist in the film, really. So the special forces they bump up against, and I knew he was someone and just didn't recognise him the whole way through. I was trying to think I know who you are, but can't tell who you are. So I mainly know him as. Malfoy's dad,
of course, yeah,
and so Harry Potter, exactly yeah, like yeah. Or weirdly, for anyone who plays the Call of Duty Modern Warfare films, there's a good guy in that who's got the same sort of big tash thing.
Right,
and he looks a lot like him, but
a bit
more
YMCA-ish,
version.
But yeah, I would tell him that to his face.
A tad.
Put it that way.
Well,
but he's great. And actually, I think from what I gather, Paul Greengrass normally uses actual special forces guys and actual Marines. Who've just come back from fighting
to be
in the film.
Yeah.
So a lot of the guys you see are genuine soldiers, which adds an air of realism to it. And they were going to have that for that part. And then he just thought, the part's growing and growing as they're rewriting it, and it needs an actor.
Mm.
And so I thought he was excellent doing it. But he did say, Jason Knight said, that he in terms of the way Paul Greengrass works, is they just sort of put you in a situation, and he'll say, right, okay, you're going to get on that helicopter, we'll fly you up, we'll start the film rolling, and... then just jump off when it's quite close to the ground. It's quite vague, you know. And to the point that apparently he undid his seatbelt quite high up because he thought, I'm going to have to jump in a minute. And all the guys on with him, who are actual special forces, undid their seatbelts as well because they thought, okay, he's doing it, we better. But they're all thinking, the guy's a maniac.
He
wouldn't do this yet. What are you doing? But, you know, he's just told, you know, jump down when you can, go over to see Matt Damon. He's got a book you want, oh, by the way, so you want to go and get that. And do whatever you need to do to get it from him.
Right.
Just, you know, up to you. And I go, well, is there any lines or anything? So you do what you want. And first few takes, he does it, but with lots of lines. He walks up to him and says, give me the book and all that sort of thing. And then they redo that a few times, and Paul Greengrass says, no, that's too word. We don't want the words. You're acting it. You know, you're doing it like a play. We don't want that. We want, just go up and rough him up a little bit if you need to.
Just punch Matt Damon in
exactly.
The
so that's what he does. And that's the sort of way he works, is that rather than have a really sort of tight script, he'll just say to all the guys... I'll just say to the actors involved, just, you know, this is roughly what we're going to do. Go and do it. The camera will follow you. You know.
I think that makes sense. I'd imagine, given that sort of directing shaky cam style, you can, because you don't need people in specific places at specific times. You just got the camera and go wherever you are.
It makes it feel quite real. It makes you feel like you're there.
So it really does.
It works well.
Also, I was quite pleased, because from the trailer, it looks a little bit like, you know, evil special forces unit and Matt Damon's fighting against them. And it's not quite as clear-cut as that. It's slightly more... the special forces unit doing what they're told to do for sort of good reasons. They're just bumping up against Matt Damon rather than saying find him and kill him. It's very much, you know, he's in the way, try and get him out of the way, with whatever level that ends up needing, rather than just saying kill him, whatever. It's not quite as callous as that.
So basically the the bad guys may actually be on the same side. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, they are, they're all on the American side. And, you know, the, not so much... I mean, we find out, as we have found out in real life, about the underhandedness of lots of it and deceiving people into things. But the Special Forces guys aren't really involved in that. They're just going to... They're the tools used to conduct that. So they're doing, as far as they know, kind of the right thing. Which, yeah, just makes it more slightly more subtle than it could otherwise have been. Yeah, but I enjoyed it a lot. Thoroughly involving.
One tweet we've had on this from Review to a Kill, who says, Green Zone was not far short of being excellent. The jerky camera work was too rhythmical and almost sent me to sleep, but on the whole, it was so an enjoyable flick. I wish someone would stop Brendan Gleeson doing bad accents, though.
It's very weird that I never really registered his accent, but no, it's rubbish. I, having seen, having caught a little bit of Lake Placid the other night, which he's in as well, he kind of, in my mind, he slots into the Sean Connery category of accents. In that, he kind of just does his voice with a bit of versions, and then you just think, oh, that's, you know, whatever he's playing. I think because he's a good actor.
Mm.
You even, forgive him.
Yes, regardless of what his voice is doing.
I do like him.
You're just going to believe him as is.
I love the fact that he's massive, and he has made no effort to lose weight to be in film.
It's really true, he's just
that's why he's probably got lots of work.
Exactly, so you need that sort of part sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
He needs more with gravitas and gravity. And he's got it. He's great in Bruges.
Yes, I was just thinking
that,
actually.
In Bruges.
In Bruges.
Yes. In Bruges, he's good at that.
Yes. Also starring Colin Farrell, which of course we mentioned last week.
So there you go. But half an hour ago to one. I'll get over this weirdness. Well, in a minute,
I know, but
not yet. Time travel.
But yeah, so Green Zone is worth seeing. It should still be out. I know it's.
Oh yeah.
I think it's in the UK or maybe US. It's number two at the box office behind Alice in Wonderland, and then a massive drop off for everything else. But it doesn't seem to be doing too well. But it's definitely well worth your time. I reckon.
Definitely.
So moving on to Connected in No Way.
Well, one film that this actually did really, I think, it topped the US box office 2 weeks in a row.
Oh, really?
It did very, very, very well. And that's Shutter Island.
Yes.
Now, we're going to be nicely vague about this.
we've got to be vague because...
I'm sorry.
A, Jennifer hasn't seen it, and B, you, the listener, may not have seen it. Well, so it's no bad thing that you're here to censor us if we go too far and tell you that they're all...
It's all been ruined. No, but it's weird because... Yeah, because the basic premise is Leonardo DiCaprio being a US Marshal with his partner sent to a mental prison island, mental hospital island.
To the island's not mental, it's there's a mental hospital.
Yes, there's a mental hospital on an island for the criminally insane. And he's sent there to investigate the disappearance of a woman from a locked room.
Ooh.
Where she gone? And if you've seen the trailer, you'll see that questions start being asked. How's she get out? What's going on? Is there? Are you not telling us things? What's going on?
Evil doctors. Are they evil? Are they?
Exactly.
One's just German. Is he a Nazi? Is he not a Nazi? Who knows? He's Max von Sydow, which probably means he's a Nazi. there's lots of that. There's lots of questions and mysteries. And,
and yeah, that's about as much as we can say.
It's about all you need to know, I think, though.
Well, yeah,
because there's nothing else really to say. Well... I think what I quite liked, actually, is very early on, the film opens with Leonardo DiCaprio and Mark Ruffalo as his partner going to the island. And I think the tone is set for the film when they're driving through, they've landed on the island, and they're going through the gates, and this... The music is about as oppressive
really,
a soundtrack
as
I've heard, I think, since Cape Fear. So again, which is not the Martin Scorsese
film. Very clanging, thudding.
Really deliberate sort of... you're not going to like this very much. So it's been described as a horror, in a way. Some people think it's a horror.
From the trailer, it looked quite horror-y. A lot of creeping through, gloomy thing, jumping, who's going to jump?
And all this music kind of says, there's going to be a horror thing, you know. And I don't know if it is horror
as much as psychological thriller. There are a couple of jumpy bits, a couple
of
which
is good.
Yeah, exactly. There are a couple of moments where you're thinking, "Oh, what's going to happen?" But it's far more intriguing in terms of what are they going to discover rather than what's going to happen to them. If that makes sense.
And all the way through, it's relatively long film, isn't it? A couple of hours.
Yeah,
it could easily touch 2 hours. And throughout, I mean, there are certain bits I was enjoying it, and certain bits that it felt a bit like the TV show Lost. That we're on a mystery island, we don't quite know what's going on. And Leonardo DiCaprio is that his dead wife he's seen there? Is it not? Is it an illusion? Is it a mirage? Is it there are people he's not quite sure. We don't know if it's in his head. Is it not in his head?
Yes,
he's
definitely being driven mad by his experience on the island. Or
what's shaping it really? So there are times I'm there a bit lost, like watching Lost. And there are times of it when I was watching there, a bit like Lost as well, thinking, this had better go somewhere pretty good.
Yes.
And then the final, you know, the final third is sort of, obviously, you know, you get towards the denouement. Mm. And I'm delighted to say that it worked for me.
Oh, yeah.
I think some people have said the ending, more than know about that. But I think it worked for me.
Yeah,
I
think it all pans out in a sensible way. I won't say, yeah. And especially, I think, towards the ending, I was starting to think a little bit, nah, not even that it's sort of obvious, but I was thinking, no, am I entirely on board with this? But then, even that, there's sort of a slight wobble for me towards the end, but then you get towards the actual end, and I was like, actually, no, I'm happy with
that. And I've heard some reviewers saying, oh, for a start, I wouldn't really call it a twist, because...
No, it isn't. It's
a twist is more like, I don't know, a schlock horror film where, at the end, the twist is the killer's the brother of whatever, you know.
Yeah, or like in Sixth Sense, suddenly, out of left field, he was dead the whole time. Oh, really?
Exactly.
Yeah. Sorry, by the way.
You've had long enough.
Yeah, it's been 11 years, move on.
We've had this conversation.
Yes, now I know.
We have. And so I wouldn't call it a twist as such, but, you know, the explanation, put it that way.
Yes. And the thing is, it's work. I mean, you can trace it. You can trace it all through.
It's logical and it fits.
Yes, but it's not. I wouldn't say it's quite a whodunit, but in the style of a whodunit, when a properly done one, you are watching and, you know, picking up on clues and trying to work stuff out for yourself.
It's and it there pans out like,
and it rewards later viewings. I think it's fair to say that would. I need
that's
to see it again.
I'm keen to see it again.
Oh, okay. So you can pick it all up. That's really good.
Which is a good sign.
But the only problem, I'm sort of loath to say that, because then you'll be watching it sort of thinking, you know, all trying to interpret things in a certain way. But I suppose anyone watching it will probably be doing that anyway, because you know that you don't know entirely what's going on.
Yeah.
Rather than a film where you think you know what's going on and you get blindsided by something else.
At
least with this, you know that you're being kept deliberately slightly on edge, and so you're kind of looking out regardless.
Yeah.
Which I quite liked.
I have heard reviewers, a couple of reviewers, saying that obviously you can see how it's all going to pan out, and you can see the ending coming a mile off throughout the entire film, so it's about the journey of the film.
Well, no, because I
really challenge if any of those watching it actually knew exactly what was happening at the end throughout, I'd be very surprised.
Yes.
So I don't think that's quite fair to say. I don't think it's one of those where you know
where it's
going.
In the, if you, you know, it could be going one of a few different ways, and you could say it's going to be options A to E, and one of them might be right, but you can't know for sure.
Yeah.
No, and yet it does all. If you make enough guesses, you might.
Exactly, you'll hit the right list, but it doesn't actually mean you got it right. One thing I would just mention, just because I noticed it quite early on, and I think I noticed it, which is probably the point, in that certain shots, rather than having complete literal continuity in terms of, you know, go to open a door, then you cut to the other side, he's coming through the door, they quite often seem to be deliberate directorial decisions whereby you just sort of miss out like a second of action. I mean, not really choppily or anything to it, but just certain, just as a style, just seem to keep you slightly off balance.
That's
bad thing.
Yeah, and I mean, that makes it sound far more obvious,
like an actual technique.
Yes, I mean, it makes it sound more unsubtle than it was, but just once or twice, in the same way that, I know, weirdly, due to a mistake, basically, I always remember in Erin Brockovich, there's like someone walking towards a door, and then you hear the knock at the door, and then it cuts to them opening the door. But if that makes sense, the sound over sounds sort of preceding the action.
Yeah.
But it's thinking lots of little things like that, but in a more creepy way.
Yeah.
Just so you're just aware that
there's this sense of foreboding through,
isn't there? Something
you're being,
not quite right.
You're being manipulated by the director, which I think is a good thing. And actually, to get a bit specific for a second on the people involved in it, obviously Martin Scorsese is the guy behind it, he's the director, and as far as I'm concerned, still probably the finest director working today. And the cast are very good. Of course, Leonardo DiCaprio, to be honest, he hasn't done... I haven't quite got Leonardo DiCaprio in things like The Departed and The Aviator.
No.
And for me, I still see the baby-face guy from Romeo and Juliet and Titanic, and I haven't quite got the grown-up version yet.
No, this, I think... No, Departed, I did like him in. I think this is among the closest I've got to him being grown-up.
I think
he still feels a bit more...
It is, I think it is.
I think because he's meant to be a slightly sort of World War II traumatised veteran.
Yeah.
Because, set in the 50s, which we probably...
And he does, I think... Leonardo DiCaprio wins the award for me for person actor most like most actor least likely to appear in a romantic comedy, because he's one of these, he really commits to these sort of films, doesn't he?
He hasn't
drift from that in a way that even, like, you know, Martin Scorsese, I mean, DiCaprio is clearly Scorsese's new De Niro.
Yes.
He used De Niro for every film.
Yeah.
He likes any actor with "de" at the front, basically.
Yes. I don't think DiCaprio is quite there yet. Not in terms of ability, but in terms of age and maturity as such, but I don't really doubt he'll get there. I think he's got the capacity to end up being phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I think he's very good now, but I think he'll go on.
he can cope with heavy subject matter.
Yeah.
And you tell me that you didn't think Romeo and Juliet was a barrel of laughs.
It wasn't a riot.
All right, no. only when they die at the end.
It was a riot, I'll give it that, actually. But actually, if DiCaprio follows the De Niro path, then he will do romantic comedies when he's about 60. Yeah. And there'll be Meet the Parents, all that.
Tubby DiCaprio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meet the Parents 8.
Yeah. So he was very good in it. Michelle Williams plays his wife, and I thought she was very good, actually.
Don't see much of it, though.
Well, I thought she was really very good.
Yes.
I saw it actually in a film called Wendy and Lucy this week, which was on TV, which was out, I think, a year or so ago. Very, very good film. About her and a dog. Anyway, very good.
Ben Kingsley is nicely creepy.
Sir Ben Kingsley.
Right, yes.
Yes.
Or is he creepy? Or is he not?
Oh, indeed.
But he is creepy, so whether he's meant to be creepy.
I don't know. I have read many reviews and listened to interviews in America where they refer to him as Sir Ben. Because, you know, he's got this thing that on every poster
he has
to be Sir Ben Kingsley, which is just... Anyway, I'm going to call him Ben Kingsley.
Oh, yes. I'll remind you of this when you get your knighthood.
Yeah, well, when I get my knighthood, yeah. I will not insist that everyone bows and curtsies. Mm. Just you guys.
Oh, see, we won't.
Okay.
We do anyway.
Yeah, thank you. I'm a lady.
Chin bows and curtsies. I do nothing.
So they're very good. And who else was very good? Martin Scorsese, as I said, is his film, really. And and Dennis Lehane, I was going to say as well. He wrote the novel it's based on.
Oh, okay.
And so I think it's quite telling, because he wrote Gone Baby Gone, the Ben Affleck directed thing, and also Mystic River, which Clint Eastwood did a few years ago. And I think both, if you've seen both of those and liked them, then you'll like this. If you've seen both and it's not your thing, then maybe you won't like this. I think they create the mood quite well, I think, and I like his. I may have to read some Dennis Lehane because he's done some good ones.
So this is definitely worth. I mean, because I was almost put off slightly because it looked a little bit too horror jumpy, and it's not. It's far more subtle and intriguing than that. So it's well worth watching.
Dave McGill, I think, sums up nicely. His tweet says, "Shutter Island is brilliant. One of the best films I've seen."
Fair enough.
Yeah, fair play.
And I think, any film that leaves you talking afterwards and musing over the ending and discussing it afterwards and wanting to see it again,
indeed,
I think, is always a good thing.
Better than Lost and quicker to watch.
Yes. One of these days I'll make a... I did make a start on Lost and then gave up when it was first on.
Yeah.
I'll come back to it one day. Because Shutter Island, based on a book. Another film based on a book that I saw this week is The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Ah. Mm. Orgy Tattoo?
No. Tattoo, the Russian
very,
twin band.
Very different from a film that she...
Yes, right. Very different from Amelie.
Yes. This
is subtitled, isn't it?
Is it from Swedish?
Sweden?
Yes. Which is, that's the Monty Python reference I was going to... Unfortunately not.
Oh, boom.
That's the Monty Python reference I was going to make. It's purely that. Is it Quest for the Holy Grail that starts off with Swedish subtitles? All the credits are in Swedish, with the O with the line through it.
It's all about elks as well.
Yes, and the guy gets fired for doing the subtitle. And the opening credits are, of course, in Swedish, because it's a Swedish film. And I just couldn't take it seriously. Well, no, I could take it seriously eventually, but the opening credits, I just kept thinking about Monty Python.
I can imagine.
And say, moose can be quite dangerous. And but then the film is itself quite serious.
Right,
and so you drop into it quite quickly.
Yeah.
This is based on a novel, which I've actually since borrowed from Jen, but haven't started reading yet. But a very successful one, part one of a trilogy. And I think they've made all three films already and are releasing them one a year or something like that. So this
is quite a commitment, really, then, isn't it?
Well, I think it is. But at the same time, I can't talk about the Swedish film industry as a whole, but I'd imagine the actors in it may well be big names in Sweden, but they're probably relatively cheap by film standards. All very good. So the film's probably relatively cheap to make, not big effects or anything like that. So.
Is it a Swedish book?
Yes. I think so. Yeah.
And so the book you've got is presumably translated?
Yes. I don't know who by it.
But
actually,
unusually into Finnish, which doesn't help anyone.
It's not good.
Yeah. But I think the reviews on the book are from English papers and positive, so it's probably a good translation.
Mm.
But it feels a little bit like a mini series. The premise is there's a journalist, a Swedish journalist who runs a highly investigative news magazine, who has been set up by a big businessman, he starts investigating for fraud, and then all his sources disappear, and he gets sentenced to prison, but because it's a lightweight crime, isn't going away for 6 months. And then gets a call from another Swedish businessman, part of a big family of corporation people, who says, "Please come and help me out. I've got a mystery for you to investigate." And he thinks, "Well, basically, I've got 6 months. I might as well get paid for it."
Yeah.
So he goes over to the island where this guy lives and finds out there's a daughter, his daughter, or his niece, has been missing for 40 years. No one's ever found out what happened to her. Please investigate. And that's basically the kicking off of the story. So he starts looking into it. We come across a hacker who was investigating the journalist for someone else, but then she kind of gets involved as well, because she finds out what he's researching, because she's looking into him. And then they end up crossing paths and just trying to get to the bottom of this mystery. And what happened to this girl 40 years ago? Why would she go missing? Did someone kill her? Did someone not? And yeah, it ends up being a 2.5 hour long film, which is too long, slightly.
Right.
It's about maybe 20 minutes too long. I'd be hard pushed to say exactly which bits you could cut, but you could cut something. Mm. But that said, it's still quite involved. The story's constantly progressing. There's very little time where you're just sitting around thinking, yeah, get on with it. There's normally something being uncovered, or you're intrigued as to they got that, so where's it leading? And just finding clues, tracing through the seedy underbelly of Swedish life, which sounds less serious than I mean to say. Well, but I mean, there are one or two quite bleak bits, because right. the hacker that he works with, the female hacker, is on parole for, well, we find out what as time's gone on, but she seems to have mental problems
from childhood,
and then she has issues with her parole officer, who is pure
not a nice
evil
person.
So there's sort of a degree of subplot backstory there, which on some levels you think isn't that relevant, but apparently it plays a more of a part in the later films. So I think knowing it's a trilogy might help make that slightly you'll adjust to it more if you think, okay, this is...
Is it a self-contained thing, though? Does it?
No, it is, yes.
I was going to say, it's not as if all of it's beginnings with no end.
It's not Big Cliffhanger.
No.
I think of a random example, but like Angels and Demons and Da Vinci Code, it's like on no level, really. But it's the same characters in later stories, but just doing a different thing. Which I was quite pleased with, because I thought they were going to set up and say, oh, you know, towards the end, now, where's this mystery going? And instead, no, you kind of wrap it up, you get an answer, and then you move on. But yeah, so it's just an interesting film to watch, because it's an unusual foreign language film based on a very successful trilogy, and it's just a kind of basic mystery.
It's actually had a pretty good nationwide release over here for a foreign language film. Normally they're stuck off in Screen 9 on a Wednesday once, if you're lucky.
It's sounding like it feels like a major...
It's been getting 4 or 5 showings a day at most major cinemas, I think, so...
It's a long watch, and it's a couple of hard moments in it, but the occasional half laugh, sort of.
Yeah, it's not completely bleak.
No, it's not pure bleak, but there are moments of... Yeah.
I think it's probably had quite a good release because the books did pretty well, and so people are familiar with it, and certainly it was one of those popular train reads, you know, whenever you get on the train there's going to be someone reading that book at the minute, you know, so it's
I have no idea how faithful it is to the books or not, but in and of itself it's an interesting story, really.
Okay.
How it comes out, so it's worth a watch. Just be aware that it is 2.5 hours long, and it doesn't quite need to be, but it doesn't really drag.
There's a lot, really,
and especially towards the end there are kind of 4 endings, really.
Wasn't quite Lord of the Rings,
but getting that way,
but a little bit. You just sort of think, oh, right, so we finished that. Oh, we've got to finish off that. Oh, and that bit as well.
Well, they love to finish. Rhetorical? I forget it.
Yes. But definitely worth a watch.
Good.
Yeah. So, seek it out.
Well, I may go and see it this weekend, because I was looking at the current releases that are due out this weekend coming, which by the time you listen to this will have been out now.
Yeah.
And it looks rubbish! It looks like we want The Spy Next Door.
I Love You, Philip Morris, which I think
might be possible, right. The Bounty Hunter, which you'll go and see, no offence, but I won't.
I saw somewhere, I don't think it'll be a critics fan, but I think audiences are thinking, basically, it's all right. I think it could be a lot worse. Mm. Although I did see a very good mock-up poster someone did of The Bounty Hunter starring Jennifer Aniston and Boba Fett, which is just brilliant. And that's a film I'd go and see. I will go and see it. I think I need to read a couple of reviews first. If it ends up being like Couples Retreat, where the reviews just say, oh, it's awful, just avoid it, that won't bother. Whereas if it ends up being like Leap Year, we'll say, it's not great, but it's all right, then I probably will. So we'll see.
Old Dogs was the other one.
Oh, that's meant to be appalling.
I mean, that's not a good week for releases.
Old Dogs is where I saw it's
John Travolta and Robin Williams in a Disney classic. It's these two.
It's
old
meant
guys
to be like Wild Hogs without the raucous brilliance that made that such a runaway success.
Just not good. So I think we've clearly gone through Oscar season.
Yes, I think it's someone on
Twitter.
We're
now in Brazzy season.
There's a London reviewer I follow on Twitter who I think said, Old Dogs is the worst film I've seen either ever or this year or recently. And it's meant to be
one of the
dire
above. Either way,
level.
No need.
No.
No, no need.
That is not one I will be seeking out.
So one film that I saw, which is it's been and gone, I think, pretty much. But yeah. Again, it's this is actually also has a foreign film link, because it was a French film. This is the American adaptation of the French film Nathalie, and this is called, well, it's called Chloe, I assume, because the main character isn't called Chloe. But it's written, the title is Chloe, but without the two dots on the last E.
So it's Chloe.
So it's Chloe. So they've really, you know, they can't even get that right.
Oh, yeah.
But this is Amanda Seyfried and Julianne Moore and Liam Neeson. Uh-huh. And it's basically a B-movie slash semi-erotic thriller.
It looks sort of half Fatal Attraction, half Poison Ivy.
Yeah. I mean, the setup is that Julianne Moore is, I guess, the protagonist. And she's suspecting that her husband has been having affairs. And she discovers, meets Amanda Seyfried, who is an escort. And so she hires her to go and sort of make herself available to her husband. And then says, but you report back to me and you tell me if he has come on to you. And so she does this a few times. And then before you know it, she's coming back saying, yes, and we also had sex. And then we're seeing him again. I'm seeing him again tomorrow. And she says, well, no, this isn't the plan. You're not meant to go and do this. And she goes, well, tough. I'm doing it. And you're paying me. What? This isn't, how is this? For? So it sort of proceeds
from there.
You
get
really
that clear from the beginning. Oh, so, okay, so I'm hiring you as an escort, but I don't want you to be an escort.
Yeah. You should just hire an actress, really. You know? Oh, yeah. And then if she sleeps with him, it's
on her. It's on her time.
More than likely.
Well, we know what actresses are like, don't we, Jen?
I'm not saying anything. Oh. I'm not, you're not goading me into a response.
Oh, we so
we're
are.
Not going out of you into a response, no. Goading. I said goading.
With an N.
With an N in it.
Anyway, carry on.
Anyway, so that's really your setup, and that's about all you need to know, really. It proceeds from there. It passed the time, and it's not brilliant. It's quite, I think excuse the rhetoric, it straddles the B movie, non B movie.
Right, it's a B plus movie.
It's a B plus. Must try harder. C minus.
Yeah. I did read this is going to sound slightly more pervy than I mean it to, but I'm also intrigued because I don't see how it fits in with the plot. Mm. See an interview with Amanda Seyfried where she said, oh no, my mum can come and see it. I don't want my dad to see it, especially not all the stuff with me and Julianne Moore.
Well, I was going to say,
that's what confuses me slightly. I'm thinking, if Julianne Moore is hiring an escort to pretend to have an affair with her husband, why did Julianne Moore and the escort suddenly hook up?
Because the plot requires it to.
Right,
and
fair enough.
Even you get to the end of that scene.
Because the marketing
think,
requires
well,
it.
Well, you do what, get to the end. Well, no, the plot, the story does need that to happen.
Okay.
So it's kind of fair enough. It's not gratuitous.
Oh,
really?
I wish I really won't bother
well,
saying
it's,
it.
I mean, yes, you see a lot. But it, right. What I mean, it's not gratuitous as in you don't, you know, I don't think it's cuttable for the story.
Okay.
That no, you need it for the story to make sense. But that said, I think the decisions the characters make to get to that point, at the end of that scene, I'm there thinking, doesn't really make logical sense.
Right.
It doesn't add up to that scene. But you do need that scene. It's a bit hokey. So you can see they've had to, you know,
okay.
Change a little bit,
but it's not entirely crowbarred in.
But it's not entirely seedy. It's a little bit seedy. And if you ever wanted to see, you know, Amanda Seyfried and Julianne Moore, just a mere 20 to 30 years between them, you know,
yeah,
get it on.
Julianne Moore's still hot.
She's still got it.
And Amanda Seyfried's
she's
hot.
She's still got it.
So, yeah,
Amanda
why not?
Seyfried is, you know.
I get the feeling that Jen is not going to be my viewing partner for this film.
but yep, so if you want to see, you know, four boobies are on display.
Hey.
And Liam Neeson.
And Liam, I don't want, yeah, no.
We've lost
I think,
Jen.
I think it's not really aimed at you, to be fair. But,
I think four boobies are four too many for Jen.
Yeah. So, I don't know, no, anyway, it's not a great film. In fact, I did end up watching it, and I saw that and Ondine, which we reviewed last week, on the same day. And it was Oscar week. It was the week of the Oscars. And I remember thinking, why am I watching a film about a mermaid and some basically lesbian porn when it's Oscar week? And, you know, where are the big Oscar films
Every
we're getting?
Every week is lesbian porn week.
And mermaid week, clearly.
Well, yes.
But, I don't know, it seemed odd.
The thing is, most of the Best Picture films have all been and gone, you know, a little while ago now. Though,
well,
so,
true,
you know.
True. But it's, I don't know, it just didn't feel quite
no,
right. Have the big
it,
quality films.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like one you should go out of your way for. But
no,
if it's on TV,
I
then
did,
you can do work.
I saw lots of mistakes for your website.
Oh, really?
I did.
Ooh.
And I'll probably have to submit them because no one else saw it.
I think... you know, they there might be literally people.
I say lots of mistakes. It was one mistake repeated again and again, which is that given they communicate via text message, Julianne Moore and Amanda Seyfried, and when she starts getting a bit more blackmaily and a bit more obsessive and saying, ah, well, you know, I'm now seeing him, and your husband says that whenever he's with me, he wishes he wasn't with you, and that sort of thing. Yeah. And so there's a lot of texts going back and forth. And although it's shot and shown in chronological order, the texts go back and forth, days here, weeks there, all over the place. So it looks like actually that text was sent a week before the one in the previous scene.
Right.
Although it clearly doesn't, because it's progressed from there. So they've clearly paid no attention. They just filmed it out of order, probably.
Yeah.
And no one's actually bothered to correct the dates on the phone. At the time, but never mind. But anyway, so that was the most interesting part of the film, I found. Apart from the four boobies. So that's Chloe.
I think three would have been more interesting.
Three
boobies. Well, like,
Total Recall.
Yes. We're like,
okay.
Well, it could be one of them under half a
or
sheet.
Or five, I'm not going to, you know.
Any odd number. As long as it's a prime number. That's the important thing. I want a prime number of boobies.
Prime boobs.
15, no good, thank you. 17 or 13, boom.
23 breasts, you can't go wrong with, really. Can you have pie breasts?
What's the
There's an idea.
Pie breasts.
Oh, yes.
23 breasts. Isn't that the sequel to 27 dresses, isn't it?
27 dresses. Yeah. 23 dresses. Isn't it number 23?
That's right.
No, 23 breasts. Just Jim Carrey. No.
Anyway, I think we've drifted into a whole breast jungle here. So, should we do the emails?
Yes, then we should do emails.
We've had an email from a new emailer. I was going to say new listener, but you may have been listening all along, just in the quiet, without actually letting us know. So, Diane. Hello, Diane.
Hello.
Greetings to
hello.
You. And Diane asked a question. I like the questions. I think
Well, it's because I got this email. I immediately just thought, ooh, and just set about looking into it myself.
Here's the question. How many people were listed in the credits of Avatar? Was this the most ever? If not, which movie? That is, I think, the second best question this week. The best question this week being, in the film Gone with the Wind...
No!
Stop!
Stop now.
So it's a fair question, Diane. And,
it is. Unfortunately, it's not one with a simple answer, because it kind of depends... because you did ask the most number of people.
Yeah.
Yes.
And as far as we can work out, well, Paul, you looked into numbers.
Well, yeah, in terms of numbers, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King did have... the credits lasted 9 minutes 33 seconds. Which is not necessarily the longest credit sequence, as John will reveal shortly. But that contained 2,048 names.
Well, that's including some gaps.
Yes, it's about 2,000 names.
2,000,
About 2,000 names. Previously, this Titanic and Waterworld had the most. Avatar, so therefore, did not quite get up there. Avatar had about 1,900 names. Yeah. So about 100 or so less than Lord of the Rings. But it's worth saying that you only get credited if you're in the crew and you work for about 6 weeks or more on the film. Less than that, you don't actually get listed. Right. So more people than that worked on it.
Fair enough. Mm. Although, you see, Clarks 2 is a weird exception because I couldn't find an actual number. But Clarks 2 included everyone who befriended Kevin Smith on MySpace in the run-up to the film's release. Mm. And he said, you know, join this and you'll get in the credits. And he did. And apparently some films some cinemas had to chop the credits reel down in order just to get the showings in. So that could well have been thousands
Very
and thousands
true.
Of notes.
Very true. Yeah.
But I couldn't actually find an answer. Time-wise, though, Lord of the Rings seemed to be the longest for 9:33. That was 2003.
That's quite long, isn't it?
But in 2004, Alien vs. Predator came out, and that had a 12-minute long credit sequence. And the film itself is 100 minutes, including the credit sequence.
Wow.
So, yeah, and I don't know why they're so long, but that's oft quoted online as a definite number.
Often, if you're one of these people who, like myself, if you go to the cinema, I'm on the way somewhere else afterwards, and you ask the person at the desk, what time does it finish? And they tell you, it's worth bearing in mind, if it's an epic film like this, knock 10 minutes off that, because that's when the credits finish rolling.
Yes, unless you're expecting the gag reel.
If you want the post-credit sequence and after Alien vs. Predator, you've got to wait 12 minutes to get it.
Actually, I even think there may even be a little thing at the end of AVP, but I could be wrong.
You think after waiting 12 minutes you deserve something?
Well, yeah, I think so. You're going to sit through that loss.
But they do, Hollywood, they call this the credit creep, that actually over the years it's getting more and more and more because more people are getting involved in the big, big films. So, for example, Nosferatu, 1922, had 16 people in the credits. Star Wars had 151. Matrix had 701. And then Avatar now has got about 1700 or 1900, so... yeah, it's grown and
I'd
grown
imagine
and grown.
Especially with CGI digital artists, that's going to bulk up the number. And also, if you split it across... because often the effects are split between four different effects houses, and then every one of those gets credited each time. So it all adds up.
Yes, yeah.
But at the same time, it is credit creep, but at the same time, if they've all done work...
Well, exactly, no, fair play.
Their name warrants being added.
No bad thing, no bad thing at all. So thank you, Diane, for your question.
Yeah, so hopefully, the answer is Lord of the Rings... or Avatar, or Aliens vs Predator, or Clerks 2.
Yeah.
It's one of them.
One of those.
Yeah.
One of
the Hopefully above. That's close enough.
If you are a listener and you've not emailed us before, do email us in podcast@moviebanter.co.uk. And in fact, I did say I was going to say a greeting to Ali, who my wife works with, who listens.
Hello, Ali.
So,
hello,
Ali, we've never actually met, but you've heard our voices. And it is quite bizarre because Zoe doesn't listen to the podcast, which is sort of odd.
Criminal.
Because she's not a really big film fan. I don't know why I married her. But no, we don't know other reasons, but just not
so
for the film.
So you do know
I
why
do know
married,
I married
yes.
her, but just not for the films.
Yes.
And
you got us for the films.
But apparently she's been going to work and then Ali will tell her what films I've been seeing and she doesn't know,
right.
Which is really bizarre.
So it means also that you can't say anything too nice about Zoe because word will get back to her.
It will get back to her. She's lovely. Of course, do that like it wasn't true.
No, I don't know. You did the snigger.
I know. I can't win from this, can I? Really?
No, you really can't.
All I was
Zoe,
mention,
Zoe, we love you, even
exactly.
if Paul.
All I was going to say is that Ali, if you're listening, email us in. Do get in touch.
That's true.
And tell us some films of your choosing.
Oh, yes.
What do you think of them?
Also had an email from Ryan saying, just got back from Alice in Wonderland and figured I'd give you my take on it. Definitely one of the more commercially marketable Tim Burton movies, which may be a result of doing it with Disney. I think it's probably a fair point. But there are a few little drawbacks for me. I liked Mia Wasikowska.
Let's go with Wasikowska.
As Alice in general. There are a few times you just didn't seem to be
Alice
emoting.
Alice in Wonderland, not Alice in general.
Oh, I see. Yes. But there are a few times when she didn't seem to be emoting quite enough. I can see that point. I think sometimes she was quite active and other times she was a little bit bland.
Yeah.
Also, the 3D aspect feels a bit inconsistent. I'd heard Tim Burton shot the film with a standard camera and then had the footage processed into 3D, much they did with Nightmare Before Christmas 3D. That may have made me more critical when I watched it. And maybe I'm being a bit too harsh, but there it is. No, again, I don't think he is
being
too harsh.
Yeah, I think last episode we rallied into the night really on that one as
yes.
well.
Yes, yeah. We disagreed on the film itself, but the 3D was dire. Other than those aspects, the visual aspect of the movie is actually quite creative, inventive, made-up-iv, and Tim Burton-iv. Good word. Don't expect the original Alice story. Tim Burton has restructured the story since he felt, and rightly so, that Alice's stories are more a series of short encounters rather than one overarching story.
Yeah.
The restructured story now ties it all into one meaningful adventure, and I think it works quite well. Couldn't agree more, personally.
Maybe.
Paul disagrees.
Yeah, yeah.
On the whole, not my favourite Burton, but it's a good movie. I feel comfortable recommending it. But unless you feel you really have to see it in 3D, you should probably save your money and see the 2D version, as it doesn't really take full advantage of the possibilities of the 3D format.
Maybe you'll agree on that one.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. It's one of the biggest 3D wastes of time
I
can think of.
I concur. It's flogging a dead horse. But in 3D!
Live, it's like the horse is coming right at you. That all the emails?
I think that's all the emails. That's it for this week. So podcast@moviebanter.co.uk if you would.
Or tweet us at moviebanter.
Yeah.
Or on Facebook.
Indeed.
Just search moviebanter, you'll come up. Yeah. I think it may be facebook.com/moviebanter.
Oh, really?
I think we've got
there
that.
There you
now.
Go. There you go. We're there.
You've got options. One of the... I'm going to put a personal request in.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, just... Mm-hmm. I rarely do.
You can't.
I'm going to. Trying to stop me. No, I'm trying to stop me. I've put a link up on the moviebanter.co.uk homepage. Which is on 9th of May, I'm doing the Woking Bikeathon, which is near us, which is 29 miles, in aid of leukemia and lymphoma research. It used to be called leukemia research. They've just recently changed their name to, I think it's and lymphoma research. But yes, for blood diseases and other things.
Right.
But yeah, so I'm doing that. So there's a link up there. If you'd like to donate something, then feel free. Or if not, then that's quite all right.
So when's that, May the 9th?
May the 9th, yes. 29 miles. I'm probably about 2 hours.
Very good.
I think, ish,
very nice.
Maybe.
Is it all downhill?
Unfortunately not.
Oh, dear.
If only. In fact, if it's the same course as last year, it's quite hilly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But we'll see how it goes.
Oh, good. Well, you can report back.
If I live.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll
if not,
be fine.
We'll, if not, then feel free to donate and offer your audition tape.
So
you can replace
John. Oh, fine. I'm not even dead yet. Give it time. Last but not least,
Desert Island Flix. Yeah.
Best Martin Scorsese film.
Indeed.
Due to the Shutter Island reference.
Indeed. And, he's done so many, isn't he?
He's done all right. He's prolific.
He's blokey, though.
He is quite blokey. Now, that's the thing. We've seen more than you have on Martin Scorsese. I'm well aware. But don't worry, next week we'll do Best Princess Diaries film. Oh, the looks I'm getting.
No, Jen is actually just going slightly wistful because Chris Pine was in Princess Diaries too.
There's no decision to be made.
She's saying it's no contest.
No, obviously. She's looking at you like an idiot, thinking, who would choose the first one?
Obvious. So Martin Scorsese, director of The Princess Diaries, didn't know he didn't. He did. Well, he's like, there's so many. You know, got your Raging Bulls. You've got your Taxi Drivers.
Yes. Mm. Goodfellas.
You know what? He's been here for a while, hasn't he?
He's done a lot.
He's been kicking around. Mm.
And you know, last 10, 20 years, he's gone a sort of a little less gangstery, I'd say, in a way for some of them, because he's done Age of Innocence, started you know, ordered the thing into the Aviator, and he's now Shutter Island as well. So he's done plenty.
True.
Any thoughts?
The thing is, I'm a bit limited as to how many I can choose from. So, to be fair, I'm going to go for The Departed.
Fine choice.
Which I think
the Oscar Academy, American Academy of
Oscars.
AAOs.
The
AOs. They agree with you. That's right. Yes. So they gave him the finally an Oscar for that.
Which that was very good. Yeah, especially because after Gangs in New York, which, did he do anything between those two?
Maybe.
But Gangs of New York was a little bit disappointing. But the
I liked it, but it's not his best.
Whereas Departed was a proper return to form.
Exactly.
See, I was torn between two, but then you're picking one of them, so I'm going to go with Casino, which I just like a lot.
Yeah.
It's Robert De Niro, when he was still on form, I think before he started doing mediocre comedies.
Yeah.
And Sharon Stone being quite good as well.
Yeah, very good. Joe Pesci
as well. Yeah, Joe Pesci's last film, I think. Well, it was when he was winding down. I don't think he's done anything.
Is he retired now?
I don't think he's done anything since. Oh, no, he was in Lethal Weapon 4, and he had a cameo in something within the last couple of years. Sorry, Paul is now just looking up just to check. He has really scaled down, but it's when Joe Pesci was in full flow. So Casino, I have a soft spot for. Haven't seen it in a little while, but I remember it being extremely good, and I know that it is very good.
Good Shepherd, he was in.
Good Shepherd, he had a cameo in that.
Well,
although he's got a couple of things coming up.
Yeah, Love Ranch, which sounds like like an awful Robert De Niro romantic comedy, and Rising Star.
So, fair enough. Love Ranch. Let's just hope that he's not reduced to doing low budget porn. Because that could be.
Sounds really odd. With Amanda Seyfried and Julianne Moore.
But yes. Clearly, well, he took his Lethal Weapon money and retired.
Clearly, fair play to him. I looked at the other day what Rick Moranis is doing lately, because I thought, where's he been? He retired about 15 years ago.
Oh, really?
After Honey, I Built the Baby, whatever it was. Well, basically, because I hadn't realised. I thought, well, why is this then? And turns out his wife had died about in the late 90s, I think it was.
No.
And so he had two kids to bring up, and so he just thought, I've earned enough money, I will retire and just be a full-time dad.
Oh.
So fair play to the fella. Mm. So good on him.
No, I'm always surprised that more actors don't do that in terms of just basically thinking, I've made several films, got millions in the bank.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose if you really love acting, then you'll carry on doing it. But if you're not that bothered, then why not?
Why not, indeed,
Yeah.
So I'm going to go for Goodfellas.
Yes.
Because it's just brilliant. I was thinking I could go for any others. King of Comedy, marvellous film. Yeah. Mean Streets, After Hours, all fine movies. But got to be Goodfellas. I want to watch it again now.
Yeah. No, Ray Liotta being on top form as well.
Yeah, just cracking story.
See, someone else who should have done more, and he's going to peter it out slightly.
Yeah, since that one when he did on a plane with
Turbulence.
Turbulence, that's the fella. Oh dear.
Oh, that's a random thought. Suddenly, I'll think about retiring actors. One random discovery was Sean Connery did the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which was dire, and has pretty much retired since then. It's not worth coming out of retirement.
Yeah.
But he took that because he turned down the role of Morpheus in The Matrix.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh,
which apparently
so.
Well, exactly. And I think it was either that one or a couple more he turned down as well, sort of fueled the decision. But because he read the script, so I don't really understand it, turned it down, because it was just sort of another film, then went on to become a runaway success. And so it may have just been that one or a couple of other similar decisions. So when League of Extraordinary Gentlemen came along, he basically thought, doesn't look particularly good, but it's one of these films. I've turned too many now. I must do it. And
he chose the wrong one.
Seems a bit fishy.
Must be a success. On paper, it could well have worked out, but it just didn't quite. So it's just unfortunate. And now he's retired. I think Indiana Jones nearly brought him out of retirement, but he just said enough.
And again, probably made quite a good choice there, because that wasn't quite
true.
Scratch,
But if he'd been in it, mate, you still would have had the aliens.
Yeah. Anyway.
I still don't think that film was that bad.
It wasn't that bad, but it wasn't that good either.
Anyway.
Well, apparently they've not got the nuggets of a story for a fifth one.
Oh,
I know.
Oh,
well, hopefully they'll take the message on board and have fewer exploding refrigerators.
Sheila beef. Oh dear. Anyway, save us. Anyway, it's rather a negative note to bring us out. Sorry. To end this.
Save us from Sheila.
End this Uber podcast. This has been a two-parter.
It really has. It's been
taken
a...
up. We started about 9 o'clock this morning, and it's now midnight. we're going to go and not watch films for about a fortnight now.
Yeah. Yes, but thank you for listening to these two epic podcasts.
Indeed.
And hopefully, you've enjoyed the double bill.
Yeah.
But we will be back next week with hopefully a more reasonable length.
I'd have thought so. And
but we'll see how it goes. Yeah. Could be another bumper week.
In the meantime, do drop us an email with your thoughts and just your thoughts, really.
Yeah.
Anything film based
or otherwise. Questions. Any random questions you
want. Film recommendations. Anything you want. Anything you want.
Yeah, that is
in the world of movies. Podcast.movieband.co.uk. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.